Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
What is up, Gypsy Gang? We are back for another episode of the Gypsy Tales podcast, and I am stoked on this one. It is with a lord by the name of Brooke McDonald. Brooke is he's a member of the Gypsy Gang, not only as an interview guest, but he is also a listener of the podcast. He's one of us people, literally one of the Gypsy Gang on both fronts. He has had a pretty insane 12 months. Brooke broke his back this time last year at World Champs. And basically, we spoke to him right after he ended up racing the World Champs this year. So he has an incredible, incredible story. I'm so stoked we were finally able to get him on. Really wanted to do this one in person. And I feel like Brooke is going to make the trip over at some point when it is possible to do so. I've got three epic mountain bike podcasts that are already done, recorded, and ready to drop. We're going to be dropping them all this week. And with that, we've also got a couple of new sponsors that I'm stoked to shout out. If you have been following the podcast for a while, you would have noticed that I've been running some pretty cool new bags with the old Gypsy Tales logo on it. We're not making our own bags, but Johnny and his team at Lusty are making their own bags now. It is called Albert Co, and it is innovative adventure luggage in every sense of the word. Now, if you're familiar with Lusty Industries, you would know that they are pretty savage in the bag game. They've basically seen it all. They've seen all the warranty claims that have come in on bags over the years. They've seen the good, the bad, the ugly, and now they've turned that into their own brand. It officially launches this month, and I'm so, so pumped to have guys in Australia in our market making products that are going to take on the world market. I think that is massive. Johnny and his team have put in just a huge effort over the last couple of years to make this happen. So excited. You can go and follow them on Instagram at Albert Co, A-L-B-E-K Co, and follow along for the drop. There's going to be plenty of information. We're going to be doing our own bags with the guys as well. So super excited about that. Pumped for that drop. We're brought to you as well today by a new sponsor, the Legends at Ride Wrap. If you want to follow along while I'm talking, whip out your phone, open up Instagram to at Ride Wrap. And man, I wish these guys were around when I was a grommet. Remember buying my first serious downhill mountain bike in 10s M1, and Dad would just say, "Mate, all you're going to do is go and throw that down a pile of rocks." And that's exactly what happened. Smash the frame, smash the paint, and I just wish that Ride Wrap was around back then. This is truly a product that is born out of necessity. Now, the core product is clear protective wraps. They have different degrees of protection. Their tailored protection product is specific to each model and size, and it offers up to 95% of frame coverage that is barely noticeable. Now, if you go on at Ride Wrap on Instagram, you'll be able to see their product in action. You buy a new bike, you spend all this money, the stock colorways, everything that these bike manufacturers are making these days is so good, and you sort of don't really want to kind of ruin that aesthetic. But with Ride Wrap, clear protective coating just goes over the top, and you're sorted. So for more information, all you need to do is head to Ride Wrap CA or follow them on Instagram at Ride Wrap. We're also brought to you by the guys at Crush Oz. Oh, coming back to where it all began, these were basically our first ever sponsor. And I hit up the gang and I said, boys, we've got a couple mountain bike drops. We've got to get yous back on. I got sent their bike bucket kit as the first ever like sponsorship thing of the podcast. I still have that bucket in my shed. I've had to update the products as I went through them. But man, these guys have absolutely nailed it. The bike care bucket comes with everything that you need. It's got like a brush, it's got the bike wash, it's got the like the aftercare spray. It is insane the products that they do. It's all made here in Australia. They're an epic company. They support mountain biking like nobody else in the industry. And it's not just for mountain bike products. I mean, admittedly, I don't wash my mountain bike that much, to be honest. But my moto, I absolutely dig into that thing every time I ride it. And I get great joy out of having a clean bike, and Crush Oz products help make that possible. If you want to get yourself a bike wash bucket, all you need to do is head to crushoz.com. Righto, just got to quickly read through some of these other sponsors that are with us every episode. Thank you to the guys at MX Store. You can head to mxstore.com.au. The guys at Crick's Tweed, you can head to crickstweed.com.au. They are still giving away that KTM 450, but time is running out. All you have to do is buy a new or used vehicle from Crick's. Big shout out to Sammy at Fist, the glove lord himself. You can head to fisthandwear.com. Dixon Flannel dropped their DBK flannel today. Shout out to Twitch to Helmy. You can also head to rivalinkdesignco.com to get your graphics sorted for your new 2021 model. And we are also brought to you by the legends at Maxxis Tires and Motorex Oils, which reminds me, I need to do an oil change on the 350. All right. Thank you so much for sticking with me on that. Thank you to all our awesome sponsors. Thank you to our awesome listeners, Gypsy Gang for life. And now I bring you Brooke McDonald. Brooke McDonald, what's up, dog?
Yo.
What's going on, bro? Lockdown, eh?
Lockdown. In 2 weeks of isolation, so yeah, just spending my time wisely.
How long have you been in there for, and how long have you got to go?
This is my sixth day now, so I've got eight or nine more days to go.
Shit! And how's it going in there? You doing as good as you thought? Is it harder than you thought? Is it easier? What's the where you at?
Well, to be honest, it's actually quite nice because, I mean, from the year I've had, it's been nothing but full on. So just to actually like be able to, well, have to not do much is good. But yeah, I'm pretty lucky. I got like a really nice hotel with good food and like a good area to go out and chill. So yeah, I got lucky with that. But yeah, I mean, I'm starting to get bored now, and yeah, I mean, like an athlete being stuck inside is not easy.
Yeah, I was just had Jack Moyer on, and he was saying how dog shit the food is, and like he can't really get Uber Eats and stuff. So I think he's on Struggle Street, but he's got the Xbox hooked up, so he's just going into the gaming world.
Yeah. I think he probably got the shittest place of all of us. I was speaking to him the other day, and he said, "Yeah, the food's dog shit," and I don't even think he can go outside either.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
How's that? So, have you got like a balcony and shit that you can go out, or they let you outside?
No, they actually let us outside. Like they've got this big barriers up around the whole of the hotel. So yeah, we can go out from like 6 a.m. till 8 p.m. and we just got to tell them our room number when we go out and come back in. So it's pretty basic, and we can spend as much time as we want out there. So it's pretty good.
Dude, what a fucking weird year, eh? 2020 coming at ya.
I know. Fuck, it's been crazy.
Well, I mean, so 2019 wasn't exactly fun for you either. So you've had a couple back to back that have been a bit strange.
I guess like the end of 2019 coming into 2020 was pretty weird for me. But I guess for me, like the whole fact of what I went through for the 2020 season was pretty good because I was basically motivated to get back to being a normal person again. And I didn't struggle with anything, so I kind of just had like my, just a goal set that I wanted to achieve, and nothing really bothered me throughout the whole quarantine and the change of the world. So yeah, it's been pretty good. But up until I started racing, things started to change.
Yeah, so maybe we should probably start. I mean, I don't know how sick of the whole injury thing you are, talking about it, but maybe we should start there to give people an idea of what you had to go through. Was it World Champs last year?
Yeah, World Champs last year.
So literally 12 months ago, you were on the hill, had a fucking big one, and your life pretty much changed.
That's exactly what happened. Life changed. Couldn't feel my legs. Got chucked over the hangers just over a probably like a 3-4 meter rock roll. And I pretty much fell from the top straight onto my back on a slight uphill. Pretty hard ground. And bounced off into the side of the ditch and was instantly in agony. Tried to roll over and I was like, what the fuck? Like, couldn't roll over. What was going on? Like, I was like trying to move my feet, my legs, and nothing was working. And I was like, fuck, this is not good. And from there I endured a pretty long day. They got me off of the track and then onto the side of the hill. That's been pretty much the afternoon there. So 5 hours until helicopter turned up and took me off the hill. And in that 5 hours, I was sort of messed around with, the helicopter's turning up now. I can see it. It's coming. And I'd be like, oh, sick. Like looking up in the sky, no fucking helicopter. Minimal pain medication. So like from when the accident happened till I got into hospital, I was still in so much pain. And yeah, it was just a massive fuck up on the organizers and the UCI of the whole getting me off of the hill, because in that time they hadn't had a heli evacuation in 29 years. So I guess they kind of thought, well, 29 years we haven't had anything, we're not going to have anything, in the present. So yeah, and the biggest thing was that the pilot was on standby 45 minutes away from the helicopter. I'm not saying it's his fault, but this is the situation. So yeah, by the time he got to the helicopter, he got his crew. There was an hour there. So yeah, it was a fucking ball ache. And then like when I was leaving, my girlfriend and team manager was at the hospital, and they asked if they knew of a guy coming in with an injury, a spinal injury. And they were like, yep, we heard that. They were like, yeah, he's coming in by helicopter. And they're like, well, he's not coming here because our helipad's out of action because they were renovating the hospital. So I had to detour to the airport and then fucking take a 20-minute ambulance ride from the airport to the hospital.
Dude, that's so
So
hectic.
it was fucking the worst day of my life by far.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense.
And then I got to hospital and they did started doing examinations on me. Put some ketamine in me, and then that was when everything went away. I fucking left my whole body and went to like Mars and was walking around on the moon and shit, just crazy shit. It was fucking mental. But
Dude,
when I when I
isn't it crazy that people do ketamine for fun?
I would never do that for fun.
It's fucking crazy though. People
After
actually take ketamine and they're like, it's a good time for them.
I know, fuck, it wasn't a good time for me. Holy shit.
Dude, that's fucking crazy. And so can you, like, you can remember, like, the actual, like, the trip, essentially, when you were on that shit, or what?
Yeah, like, fuck, it was pretty gnarly, too, because actually dosed me up on there, and then they'd stuck a finger up my ass as well. So it was, like, the whole situation of, like, being on ketamine, going into the K-hole, and having a finger stuck up my ass was just next level. Like, was like sitting there like, whoa, fucking like clenching my ass, because like obviously that's a test they do to see if you've still got the
like the reflex,
if your nerves and muscles are still working.
Yeah,
the reflex. So I mean, yeah, when he did that, was a good sign, because the reflexes were still working. But yeah, not a good time of being put on ketamine and doing that at the same time.
Yeah, dude. Had you, like, did you know much about ketamine in general, like, before that?
No, never. I obviously heard of the K-hole, but, you know, never. No one's ever really explained to me what the K-hole was like, and what it, you know, what experience it was.
Yeah, how would you describe it? Because I've never done it. How would you describe it?
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, I literally left my body and was on the fucking moon. You know how, like, the moon has, like, those big crater holes?
Yeah.
I was, like, walking through those, like, just fucking cruising around the moon on the space dust, kicking the space dust around. It was mental.
Wow. But it wasn't a good, like, so you'd say it wasn't a good experience, though.
I guess it wasn't a great experience, because I was getting the finger up my ass at the same time, but like that experience of being on space was pretty cool, because like obviously it took away all the pain from my back as well.
Yeah.
So I kind of just forgot about all of that.
Yeah, that's hectic. But, yeah, I've never thought that, you know, obviously there's like the medical application of it, but you hear so many people that just do ketamine as like a, you know, like a recreate. I guess, fuck, it seems it's too intense to be recreational. Like, I feel like that's almost like a psychedelic experience, you know, and like any psychedelics.
Yeah, definitely.
You're not like, you know, I'm definitely not racing out to do like multiple grams of mushrooms every day, because it's just too much. Like, it's a lot. There's a lot on.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I would never do it just for, you know, day-to-day usage of drug, for sure not, because like... Yeah, the fucking experience I had was like, that was enough for me.
Yeah, well, you've done it now, dude. You don't have to get back there again. Oh,
yeah,
dude.
I've been into that K-hole.
Yeah. I'm definitely not rushing out to fucking get amongst it.
Nah, definitely not.
Oh, so yeah, it's crazy. Like, downhill's so fucking dangerous. Like, it's very obvious when you watch it. You're like, oh, if they crash, that could go extremely wrong. But for the most part, it's super safe at the level that you guys do it. Like, you really don't see crazy injuries, and even when there is big crashes. But there was obviously, like, a huge flaw in the UCI's, I guess, like, processes of making that shit happen. Because that's at the World Champs. Like, that's the biggest event in the world, and you'd expect that that's the event where dudes will be hanging it out the most.
Oh, for sure, bro. And like, I mean, to have two doctors on the hill when there's like downhill practice and cross country racing going on, it's fucked. Like, I mean, doesn't matter how much it costs you to have doctors on the hill, you need more than two doctors when there's two races going on, because I mean, the doctor never turned up to me until an hour and a half with pain relief because they were attending some other people. Like, what the fuck? And normally, like, more so in Europe's a lot better run. You know, you can have a helicopter within a person within 10 to 12 minutes, whereas there they, like, obviously they told me that if your injury is life-threatening, they'll have the army there within 20 to 30 minutes. If it's not life-threatening, you know, it'd be about a bit over an hour. But they didn't fucking know if my injury was life-threatening. They didn't know if I had internal bleeding or how bad my spinal injury was. So, you know, all that shit pisses me off. And like, yeah, I hate thinking about it and talking about it, because like it just boils my blood, because I've never had one single apology from anyone at the UCI. Like, it's just shit, bro. Like, it just pisses me off. And you know, we kind of just get walked over by those guys for other stuff as well. So like, I mean, I hate to say it, but yeah, I'm definitely not fans of them after what I went through.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. And that was going to be one of my questions, is like, did they come to you and just say like, oh, how could we have made this better? Like, is there, you know, did they reevaluate their processes going forward or?
Bro, to be honest, they didn't do anything. Like, I did a podcast with HKT guy.
Oh, Davey, yeah.
Yeah, Davey. And I on there, I was just open and honest about what happened and like how pissed off I was. And then the UCI, one of the guys come to me and like called me and was like, you know, sorry this happened. I messaged you, I, you know, blah blah blah. But I never got a message. I never got an email apologizing, nothing. And I said to him, look, like, I think the two biggest things that I want to see happen is like, one, that we need to know the medical procedure of you know, sorry, the evacuation of what's going to happen at a race event. Of like, so you know, so riders are comfortable and confident that, you know, they'll be taken off the hill, you know, in the safest, most safest possible way, and you know, efficiently as well. So that was my biggest concern, like making it happen. And then, you know, turn up to World Champs and I asked the riders rep about it, if he heard anything about it, and nothing heard about it. And then I sort of piped up about it and told the organizer at Leogang about it, and he was like, yeah, no, we haven't heard anything. He was straight on the blower to the UCI, and then the next day they released a evacuation procedure, like of what's going to happen. So, you know, just I felt like they didn't give a shit, like they didn't really care about me.
Yeah, I mean that is fucking pretty hectic to, you know, like the writers are the show. Like that's literally all that you're sort of there
Exactly.
for, you know.
Yeah, bro, and we, you know, I feel like we kind of just get walked over sometimes because, you know, at the end of the day, we just want to race our bikes and put on a show for everyone. But, you know, we also want to be safe and have a safe environment and, you know, rules that work for us as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, you look at in moto, you've got like the Asterix medical crew, and it's just insane the level of efficiency. And they've got multiple doctors, they've got physios, they've got all of these, you know, then they've got trainee nurses. Like, it's such a well-organized machine. And I mean, dude, I know that there's guys that would be dead if it wasn't for the Asterix medical unit. And that's what's so crazy to think of, is that, like, legitimately, it saved lives.
Yeah, I mean, that's so cool, and I've seen that from the moto side of it. It's pretty awesome. But yeah, I mean, like when we're racing in Europe, we're pretty lucky. They have a like the organizers really do a great job of putting on a solid evacuation plan and medical with doctors and stuff like that. So we're pretty lucky there. But I guess Mount St. Anne, just obviously with their 29 years of not having to have a helicopter turn up there, they kind of just went about it as like, yeah, 29 years has been nothing happened, so there's not going to be anything going to happen this year, sort of thing. So yeah, but I just think like you don't turn up to an event and have two doctors and a helicopter that's not on, well, that's on call, but the pilot's 45 minutes away. A different story if he was at the, you know, hangar where the helicopter was, you know, a 20-minute flight, I would have been off the hill.
And spinal injuries, like, I mean, I'm sure you know this now as somebody that's like lived through the experience, but like those first few hours are so crucial in the actual recovery time and the damage that you're left with. And it's like the reaction time, it's like every minute is so valuable to the long-term recovery of somebody that's experienced that trauma.
Yeah, sure, bro. I honestly, that was the biggest thing that I wanted, was I need to get off this hill, get me a helicopter, because they tried to take me down in a fucking quad on the back of this trailer with a stretcher. And yeah, Wen and Blinky were like, "What the fuck are you guys doing? Get him off of there." So they got me off, and I was like, You guys need to call a helicopter right now. I know how serious this injury is, and I just wanted to be off the hill because, yeah, by the time I'd finished up that day, it was like 11 o'clock, and I couldn't have been operated on till the morning.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, like you said, it's pretty crucial with a spinal cord injury. Every minute counts, and, who knows what. 4 hours, 5 hours could have done before if I had surgery that day. What could have been done? But I mean, I'm just lucky to be able to walk again and race my bike.
What like that feeling, man, of laying on the track and being like, holy fuck, my legs don't work. Like, I think that everybody that rides bikes, whether it's mountain bike or moto or does any sort of, two-wheeled sort of activity, that's like pretty much the worst case scenario that you can think of. And I mean, I know that I've thought about that shit, like that moment that you've gotten. Even when I had that crash a few months ago, like my legs weren't working properly and it was just because of some swelling in the end. But I remember it was like a week and I went back to the hospital after a week because I was like, I still can't fucking walk. Like, I can't use my legs properly. And I could walk, but I'm like dragging my feet around. And mum's like, this is fucking bad. And then when I was in hospital and the doctor come in and he's like, it could be this, this, and this, talking about like a spinal cord injury. I was laying on that bed before the MRI, just fucking peaking, cunt. Like, that was the worst, like, headspace I've probably ever been in my life, because you're staring down the barrel of your legs not working. And when it's, that's like what we do, man, like, as, active guys that are, doing these kind of sports. So, like, do you remember being on the floor and just like having that realization? Because, like, you'd obviously have the pain, but then I'm sure on another level completely, it's like you'd be blocking out the pain and being like, holy fuck, my legs don't work.
Yeah, I guess for me, I was like, I sort of just had a different frame of mind of like approaching it, because like fuck, I was in the pain I was in was excruciating. I honestly had never been in pain that much, so like I think like that kind of took the edge off of me thinking about fuck, this could be my career over, like this is me done sort of thing. I think the pain really blocked that out, because I was just thinking about like, okay, I know how serious this is, I just want to get off the hill. But yeah, the pain that I was in was fucking next level, and I think that kind of blocked out that whole thing. But from then, I was pretty optimistic that I was gonna fucking walk again. Like, I just didn't have that thought in my head, like, yeah, fuck, you're fucked, like you're not gonna walk again. Yeah, I was kind of just like, if it did happen, then fuck, it is what it is. I've got to deal with this. But yeah, I think I was pretty open-minded about like, yeah, fuck, I'm gonna walk again one day, and like whether it's gonna be in fucking 3 days' time or 3 weeks' time, like, I just kind of already had like started planning forward of like what I was gonna do, what my goals were gonna be, all that sort of shit, which really, really helped me to get to where I am today.
And then, like, what when you talk about that pain, like, where was the pain? Like, was it even a pain that you could actually describe going through when you look back at it?
Yeah, it's definitely a hard pain to describe. It was like in the place where I broke my back, so like my lower thoracic. And I don't know if it was like, I don't know if it was the pain from the bone sitting on the spinal cord or like the actual break. Obviously I couldn't feel my legs, so there was no pain in there. It was just all my back. But yeah, it's definitely a hard pain to describe, because it was just like real sharp shooting pains, like just like, like those that the pain where you kind of hold your breath for a long time because it's that fucking painful.
I wonder with stuff like that whether, because it's like a broken bone should be a broken bone, right? Like, I've broke my wrist, and you snap your wrist and then it fucking hurts, but it is what it is. Like, you can deal with it. But then, you have that kind of pain. I imagine so much of the the actual pain itself would just come from like your body trying to stop you from moving and just like completely immobilize you. And like, you know, when you go through something so serious where it's like you've lost feeling, you got an injury to your spinal cord, like, because you think about it in like evolutionary terms, like let's take away hospitals, mountain bikes, let's take away everything. Let's say you're like caveman Brooke and you fell off a fucking cliff and you've broken, like you had the injury that you had, you're fucked, like full dead. There's just no there's no coming back from that. Like, so your body would just be full freak out mode of like, you're in this much pain until you die.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, so hectic. Be a fucking slow death.
Can you imagine that shit? Like having to go through what you went through with like no doctors, no nothing.
Yeah, I fucking couldn't imagine. Well, I went through 5 hours of fucking sitting on a hill.
Yeah, I suppose you did.
Doing that. that's kind of you know, a little bit of it. But yeah, I couldn't imagine not having, you know, any of that and just being there fucking lying paralyzed. But yeah, it's mad. Like the feeling, like when I tried to roll over, it was fucked because I was like, why the fuck, you know, my leg's not working. And it was just like, you know, my brain was like, lift your legs. But like, I was, you know, my brain was trying to tell my legs to move, but they weren't moving. Yeah, it's pretty mad.
Yeah, no thanks, man. I'd rather hear you talk about it than go through it. That's for damn sure.
Yeah. But it's like, it's fucking crazy. Cause like, you know, as much as I wish it didn't happen, I was like, yeah, this has been a fucking time in my life where I've like realized like how grateful I am to be able to walk, to be able to ride my bike, just to be able to live. Like, fuck, you know, starting to walk again, like it was like being a toddler again, like having to learn to do everything. You know, like fucking rewiring your brain and retraining everything. Like just even to lift my foot was an exercise in itself.
Yeah, so what's the...
But like it's been such a cool experience.
So you obviously have the surgery, and then you get to the point where it's like, okay, did the doctors say anything about like recovery, how long it was going to take, or did they say, we don't know if it'll come back? Like what was the early days sort of diagnosis?
Well, yeah, this was a good thing. Like my surgeon came to me the next day and was literally like, yeah, everything went well. Like we're really happy with what we've done. And I was like, cool, yeah, sweet. Like, you know, that's enough. That's all I need to know. But he never said to me, okay, this is going to be, you know, this amount of recovery. You know, you might actually not walk again. He never said anything like that. So, like, those 2 weeks of being in Canada was, like, real crucial part of, like, not actually being told, you know, you might not walk again because, like, you know, obviously I'd set my mind to, you know, specific goals that I wanted to achieve. And yeah, like I guess with a spinal cord injury, it can take years, or it can take months to heal. And I guess with mine it was sort of months until I was, you know, properly walking again. So yeah, I guess with something like this, they can't really give you a proper indication of when you're going to be fully recovered. I was told that, you know, 1 to 2 years you will be, you know, fully recovered again.
Yeah, what the support from the industry was pretty crazy to see as well, like in those early, you know, the early stages of it. Was that a pretty like motivating factor as well? And like what was the shit that was like did motivate you through that early stages?
Yeah, I mean, the support was insane. I mean, I never thought that I had so many people backing me. And just like social media was just insane. The people that come to me and, you know, wish me luck and like told me that I was going to get through this, or people that had the same injury as me and being like, yeah, you've got this, you know, just all the support was amazing. And like, I think that really helped me a lot get through where I am today. Cause like, obviously I'd set my own goals and, you know, from day one, of when I stood up, I was like, fuck yeah, this is on. Like, I'm going to be riding my bike again. And from then I was like, okay, I'm going to, you know, did a goal that's potentially not realistic, but you know, I'm gonna try to achieve it, and that was to race Croatia in May this year. So like that really drove me to doing everything properly, like rehab, recovery, all that sort of shit. Really massive, you know, for me to achieve that goal. But yeah, like just everyone that supported me was amazing, and like the people around me, my physios, doctors, my girlfriend, my family. You know, I just felt like positive people around me, which was a big help, because you know you don't really want negative people around you, people that are putting you down or being like, you know, this is not going to work. You know, you're probably not going to ride your bike again, because you know, not that I felt like it would ever affect me, because I'm the sort of person that would, like, you know, obviously want to prove them wrong, but you know, some people take it differently. So yeah, I think that was really important, having, you know, everyone supporting me and messaging me.
Yeah. And so how long did it take to start making some progress? Like, how long was it from when you crashed to when you were like first sort of standing up? And did they like pretty much like rush you into rehab as well?
Yeah, they really pushed for you to stand up. I think it was two or three days after my accident, I stood up. Like, that was wow. That was really hard, because like obviously my legs, I you know, had feeling come back in my legs, but there was still so much nerve damage, and like, you know, I couldn't really feel the bottoms of my legs. Like, I could feel that they were there and it was working, but just all the nerves around it was just not firing. So a lot of it, you know, was done through my upper body and the help of the PTs there. But yeah, fuck, when I first stood up, I was like, this is pretty cool. Like, 3 days after surgery, being paralyzed, like, I'm standing up. And then the next day they had me walking on the parallel bars.
Yeah.
Which, like, you know, same thing again, like so much weight through my upper body, but it was just so sick to walk again. And obviously I had so much defects on my legs, and like I had drop foot, so like my right side was more damaged than my left, so my right foot was just like, when I'd lift it up, it would just like, you know, just flop down and drag along the ground.
That's like, so pretty much what I had for like a week and a half.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's fucked. It's not nice.
Nah, and you feel, yeah, because I was getting, so I had like all this, because I busted my hip, but then I had like, I tore the skin off the, like the skin and the muscle and the fat and everything, like it sheared off, and it's called like a degloving injury. And, but yeah, so then what happened is like there was so much blood and fluid that like filled that void, and it just put like pressure on everything. So like I didn't actually do anything in terms of like breaking to like push on the spinal cord, but that all that fluid was just fucking up with all my nerves, and I'd walk and my fucking toes would be dragging. I'm just like, oh fuck this, I've cooked it here.
Fuck yeah, that's not a nice feeling.
Nah.
'Cause it makes you, yeah, fucking, it fucks everything. Like, it fucks your whole walking.
Yeah. Just so scary to think that that's how you could be too.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So when then you sort of get the rehab stuff going, how, like, did you ever have doubts where you just not, like, you're like, fuck this, I just don't think I'm going to do it? Or like, did the riding thing, it was just always going to happen?
No, it was always going to happen, bro. Like, I felt like every single day was progress, and I was achieving something every single day, which was huge for me, because like, you know, going through something that, like, you know, I lost 12 kilos in 2 weeks. It was all my muscle gone. Like, I was skin and bone. Like, so like, going from someone who was solidly built and had, you know, decent sized legs to seeing myself with like nothing, I was like, fuck, this is going to take a long time to build. And yeah, but like, yeah, I just achieved something every day, whether it was small or big. Like, you know, walking on my walker, you know, 50 steps was a huge achievement for me. And like, I just kind of took that for the into the next day and like, okay, I'm gonna walk 100 steps today, or I'm gonna walk 100 meters, and like I just sort of push myself until I couldn't actually, I'd fatigued or I had to sit down, just so, in the back of my head I knew that, that I could actually do that with the right rehab and the training. But yeah, like when I arrived in New Zealand, the 4 weeks I spent at the spinal unit here was probably like the biggest 4 weeks of my recovery, that was really important because I achieved so much there. Like I turned up there basically in a wheelchair, could walk a few steps, and then walked out of there with just a walking stick that like was for me if I when I started getting tired. But I was like to myself, I'm gonna walk out of this place with nothing. And yeah, I did that, which was like a huge achievement for me. And I was riding my bike 5 weeks after my surgery, so that was also another big achievement.
Yeah, that's so crazy to think that you could have rode your bike so quickly after it. Were you like before this injury, like are you a training dude? Like obviously there's guys that I mean all you guys at the top level in downhill have to train, but you know like me and Jack were talking about Wynn and it's like he just loves to suffer. Like he could be a fucking Navy SEAL, that dude. You know, like he just loves to do that shit. And I feel like a guy like him, given that, you know, kind of situation with like a real bad injury, he would just like, he'd froth on just the training that he'd have to do to get back. But I mean, not everyone's like that. I mean, I'm fucking eyeing that dude. So, but it's like, were you that guy or?
I'm definitely that sort of person who loves to suffer, and I love to put myself into pain. Like I've always, since I've had like a proper training regime and like a coach, I've really been into that. So like, yeah, everything was if it was hard work, I was always keen to do it. But like the crazy thing was, like when I would do something one day, like I would fucking suck at it, like balancing on one leg, I couldn't even do it for 5 seconds. And then I'd go and do it that afternoon or the next day, and I could do it. I could balance on my leg for 5 seconds or 10 seconds. It was crazy. And like, I had dreams where I was like, fucking in my dream, I was walking. Next day, I was going to the gym, tell my physio that I had a dream that I walked, and then I walked that day. It was crazy.
So how like it was more of like a mental deal then to go through really. Like it was it harder mentally than physically almost?
Oh,
But I
I
guess
reckon
hard is probably the
physically.
wrong. Physically it was probably like physically obviously because you had these physical challenges to overcome, but the way that you overcome them was more mental than physical, would you say?
Yeah, definitely. But it was more physical because, like, obviously, with this injury, it affects your body so much. So I fatigued so quickly. Like, I'd do half an hour of gym sessions and I'd have to go home and have a sleep before I'd have to do another one. So, like, sort of probably for like 4 weeks, that was the struggle, was the physically side of it, was just like being able to do something. I'd be like, fuck, I need to go home and sleep because I'm so tired. But once I got past that, it was just like, I guess it was just like a walk in the park. Like from what I went through to being able to actually walk again, like everything was just felt like a walk in the park. Not that I'm saying it was, but for me, like what I'd been through previously, spending that time on the hill and all that sort of shit was just kind of like made the whole approach to the rehab a lot easier.
Almost like because that pain the on the hill was just so gnarly that everything else was a little bit easier after that.
Definitely. That's what it felt like. And like, yeah, I felt like fucking every single day I look forward to going into my gym and, doing the rehab. Whereas like some people, with an injury like what I had, probably were like, fuck, I can't be fucking going to the gym today, or I can't be asked doing rehab. Whereas like I felt like, it's crazy what the body and mind can do. Like I really felt like the you know, the healing of the body and the mind really, really got me through a lot of this.
And so, like, what about now then, as, you know, you sort of get back on the bike and you started to train to do your job again, has it given you almost like a new level of what you can kind of put yourself through? Like, have you seen any mental changes that have kind of lasted in you that have made you a better athlete?
I don't reckon mental changes. I definitely think that I've fucking loved riding my bike more than I did before, because obviously I've had a second opportunity at doing it. So it's kind of made me realize, like, you know, biking is actually pretty sick. And like, just like when I was riding, I was just so stoked. Like, I didn't even care about racing. Like, I was just like, obviously with all the coronavirus and stuff happening, I was just fucking frothing on riding my bike and just, you know, doing it with mates and being able to ride fast again, which was pretty sick. But yeah, like, first time I rode my bike in the forest, I was like, fuck it. You know, I don't even feel like I've had an accident. You know, I didn't feel like I had anything. Obviously I could still notice the small side effects with like feeling in my feet, not being able to pedals, and the rod in my back, just sort of like limiting me to some stuff. But yeah, fucking riding a bike, you know, I just felt like I'd never left, you know, previous to my crash.
It's crazy, like, if you think about it in terms of like what the actual feeling of the happiness is that you had on the bike. Like, if you just, in terms of the sensations that go through your body that you then go, fuck, this is just pure joy, like riding that bike. It's like, that should theoretically always be there, but it's like, yeah, all this other stuff kind of clouds it. And then, you know, you like, before your injury, it's like, oh, I got to fucking do this for a job, and maybe my mechanic's pissing me off, or the team's fucking me around, or like this and that. And it, all of those things take away from that available happiness. But then it's, yep, like all those fucking clouds go away when you ride that bike the first time after the injury. And then it's like, it's completely unobstructed by any fucking bullshit. And it's like, that was there available all along, but it just like takes this new perspective to like let you have that feeling again, you know?
Yeah, definitely, bro. And don't get me wrong, like, I loved riding my bike before my accident, and like, fuck, you know,
oh yeah,
I was just so stoked riding my bike. But I feel like now I've like really got a whole new love for riding again. Like, I just, you know, just like, I want to ride my bike every day. Like, you know, I couldn't care less if they were like, fuck, there's not going to be any racing for fucking 3 years. You know, from now, I'd be still fucking stoked to go out and ride my bike every single day. As much as I am a racer, like, I've, you know, I'm fucking so competitive, and, you know, I just want to keep racing. Like, if that was taken away from me, I'd still be stoked to just ride my bike.
And so when you get back on and you start training for the world champs, and so what races have you done this year? And I guess, like, how has those races gone for you?
Yeah, so I had planned to do Croatia in May, but with coronavirus, that sort of fucked everything. So, like, everything was kind of cancelled end of August, start of October. So I went over for 6 weeks before just to, you know, get some riding in, because I had only ridden my downhill bike 3 times before I left to go overseas. So, like, I needed to put some time in on it. So yeah, just went over and spent some time with my team and teammates and mechanic, and did a bunch of testing and all that sort of shit. And yeah, I was just fucking stoked on riding my bike. I felt like I was riding the best I'd ever ridden before. And then I come to Crankworx Innsbruck, race that, because I felt like I really needed to do a race before I went to World Champs. So I did that. I finished 11th, which I was fucking stoked with, because, like, you know, it was a pretty solid field and there was a lot of fast riders there. And yeah, like, from there, kind of like I felt like the whole coronavirus really just fucked me. Like, it just sort of mentally drained. You know, what I went through to getting to this stage was like so much preparation, and, you know, just turning up to a race and having to have a fucking mask and my credential. And, like, you know, when I wanted to go to the lift, I had to have my mask on and fucking show the people my credential. Like, you know, I'm not used to that. I just fucking get my bike out of the pit and go straight to the lift and go out for a run, you know, all that sort of shit.
Yeah.
Really took its toll on me, you know, trying to focus on a race, let alone having to go fast too. So like, you know, there was just like fucking security guards around being like, oh, put your mask on or show me your credential. I'm like, I've got a number plate on my bike. Like, I'm racing, don't, yeah. You know? I mean, you know, I feel like I'm whinging, but like I felt like it really affected me and, you know, all that sort of shit. You know, going into, to a, you know, the biggest race in the world can affect someone. And it affected me quite badly. And like I
well, crashed. You don't know how it's going to affect you until you go through it. Like, it's easy to look back now and, you know, but in the moment, it's hard to sort of have that perspective. So it makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I was so fucking amped to race my bike, you know, leading up to all those races. I just couldn't wait to do it. And then I got there and it was just kind of like a big, not a downward spiral, but like, you know, kind of just a big downer on the whole event. No spectators, you know, just all that sort of shit that I'm used to. I just sort of didn't adapt to it properly. And then come qualifying, I actually felt really good. And like, got probably like a fucking minute into the track and had this fucking shitty ass crash and went a bank wall and fucking did a 360, went to pick my bike up, my bars had snapped, so like, you know, there's qualifying gone, like, no, you know, no time to for me to see like where I actually sit in amongst, you know, the best riders in the world. And then like, you know, fucking going into race day, like, all that sort of stuff plays on your mind. There's like a section that a lot of riders were struggling with, and fuck, I was just like fucking struggling with it so bad, and like really played a big part of my mind. And yeah, come race day, fucking, you know, probably got like 2 minutes into the track and just had this shit wash out, fucking mud all over my grips, got up, chugged on, and then had this fucking huge crash, like massive crash. And I was just like, fuck, like, you know, this couldn't fucking get any worse. And like, I'd kind of, you know, like previous to that, like the whole 6 weeks I'd been riding my bike, I hadn't had a crash. And like, you know, I was really wanting a crash, a big one. So I knew what it was going to feel like.
That'd play on your mind.
If I was going to be in it. Yeah. And like, you know, I was just hoping like, fuck, come on, have a big crash. Like, and, yeah, fuck, I was riding one day and come across this section. This was just when I was training, and there was this like pole lying across the ground that I didn't see. And I would have been going probably like 30, 40K, and the fucking pole flipped up and went straight through my crank into my leg and just tomahawked me over the bars. I was like, oh, fuck, here's another fucking Mount St. Anne again. Fucking landed on the deck so hard. And like, was lying there, I was like fucking wiggling my feet, like just like, oh yeah, right one moves, left one moves, stood up, fucking bounced around. And I was just like, honestly, that was like the best day of my life, because like, you know, it was a crash that fucking was so big. And like, I just got back up and I was sweet. I was like, fuck yeah, you know,
back to the old bulldog
again. Yeah. And then like, yeah, come Worlds, I had that fucking huge crash and just like smoked my shoulder into this like side of the stump. Fucking got back up, carried on. But yeah, that was a disaster. And then like going into the first two World Cups, like I just kind of just was like the whole, yeah, like I said, the coronavirus shit just brought me down. And like, I didn't even really want to race, and the weather was shit and it was cold, and like just all that shit sort of played a part on it. And yeah, like I just got there and I was like, fuck, I, you know, crashed in qualifying, I crashed in finals. Like, I was just like, fuck, why am I crashing all the time? And like, just all this shit was just playing on my mind. Like, not so much like the fact of me being able to be confident riding my bike, but just all that small shit with like, you know, masks and this and that. But yeah, like I sort of like turned it around on the last day, on the finals, and I finished 23rd, which I was really stoked with. So like, you know, I kind of realize like, yeah, fuck, I'm still fast and I can still be up contending with those top guys. And yeah, I just made a decision from there that I was going to come home, like miss the next two World Cups, because like, you know, fuck, I'd be coming home and almost started December if I'd gone there. So I was like, yeah, I need to come home and
have a break and just relax.
Yeah, yeah, that's sort of what Jack was saying. Like, if he did the last two World Cups, then he would have been coming home super late, and then you've got the holidays and flights, and it's just, yeah, it's definitely been a gnarly year for that sort of shit. So it's probably it's better to play it safe in that respect. And then, well, I guess you guys don't start till April next year, right?
No, we don't start till April next year. So, you know, like, I just wanted to come home and have a bit of a break and, like, you know, fucking just
be
like
normal
wind
for
down
a change,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, bro, yeah. And so, yeah, I feel like I really, like, achieved the biggest goal that I wanted to do was race my bike again. So, like, you know, that was a massive win in my eyes. And, you know, to finish 23rd at my last World Cup was another big achievement too. So I was like, yeah, happy. I was like, really happy to, like, end on a good note and just come home and, you know, call the season and be actually healthy going into the off-season training.
Yeah. And how was the team through it all? Like, you know, and then, you know, with results and stuff like that, you know, not being what you'd normally achieve, but have they been pretty cool through the whole thing?
Yeah, they've been amazing, honestly. Like, they've never really dealt with such an injury in their team before, and so, like, this was a huge blow on them, and they were really taken back. And, you know, obviously I was really keeping them up to date with all my progress, and they were just like, you know, they were just mind blown of what I'd done. And, you know, they were just so stoked to see me over there and, like, just racing my bike. They couldn't give a shit about my results. They were just so stoked to see me back racing world. So, yeah, I'm really glad that I've got a good team like that. I mean, I would hope a majority of teams would be like that. But, yeah, just there was no pressure from them whatsoever of, like, results. Just ride your bike and have fun.
Yeah, and then so, like, yeah, it makes sense that you'd want to have a clear run into 2021 and just... Because, I mean, essentially, like, your life hasn't been normal for a whole year, because this time 12 months ago was when you got hurt, and then you go through all the injury, and then you go through, you know, the quarantine and, like, all that shit. Like, it's
fuck
been...
no, yeah, like, from day one, bro, I haven't had a rest. Like, I've probably taken at least a week off. So I'm just drained. Like, I just, like, I need to come home and be normal again.
Yeah, dude, I'm so bummed there's no Supercross in Auckland this year, because that's always a good time.
Yeah, I know. I was fucking gutted about that too, because, yeah, that's a good fucking party there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, I know you've at least had a few beers since your injury.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, definitely, so let my hair down a bit.
So what's the off-season plan like? Are you going to try and get back on the moto, or what's your deal with that?
Yeah, definitely. I sold my moto before I left, but, yeah, I'm keen to get another one.
What are you going to get?
Not too sure yet. I'm just trying to work that out now, what I want to get.
Get a 350, bro. 350 gang.
I'm not a big fan of them, eh?
Ooh, have you ridden one?
I don't know why, I've ridden one.
Yeah. What, you just don't like KTM or just the 350 in general?
Not KTM. I just didn't like the 350. I just felt the, you know, that in-between sort of, I don't know, it didn't really suit me. I didn't ride it much, but I kind of noticed the difference between, like, the 350, 450 and 250.
Do you normally ride a 450?
But yeah. Nah, 250.
Oh, really?
Like, 450 is too big for me.
Yeah, see, that's why I like the 350, because the 450 is too big for me too. But the 250 just feels slow.
Yeah, I rode, I rode like a 18 350.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they've changed a lot since then, but, yeah, I didn't really like that one.
Yeah, that's bizarre. You tripping, son.
I'm not a fucking moto guru, so... Okay.
Yeah,
just,
true.
How
long you been riding for?
Probably moto. I've ridden for like maybe 8-9 years.
Yeah, right. So you've been into it for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. More so like farm. I used to ride farm bikes heaps because my grandparents have a farm, so just to thrash about on them. I got like a proper moto. Was when like, you know, I was like, fuck, this is actually real sick.
What was your last motor? You had a 250 Yamaha, didn't you?
No, Honda.
Oh, you had a yeah, right. Yeah, sweet. Yeah,
Those
dude.
things are pretty sick.
Yeah, they are pretty good. Honda don't make many bad bikes.
Nah. But yeah, I might get another one of those or a Yami.
Yeah, dude, the Yami 250F's bullshit good. Have you rode one of those things?
Yeah. I haven't, but I heard a lot of good things about them.
Nah, they're fucking unreal. If I was gonna get a 250F, that's what I'd get.
Fuck yeah.
Whereabouts do you like, what's the crew that you guys ride with? Have you got like a pretty solid little crew that you spend time on the bike with, or because a bunch of the mountain bike boys are into it too, right?
Yeah, but we're kind of spread out across the country, eh? So like, yeah, I mean, I don't have like a whole heap of mates that ride moto where I live. Like, every once in a blue moon, I'll go ride with Coops, but very often. So yeah, I don't really like. More so, I just ride by myself or a couple of mates if they're gonna go out. But I've got a track at my gran's place, so pretty good. Pretty good there that I can just go ride whenever I want.
Yeah. Do you know BT that well? Yeah, dude, you got to go ride with Ben, man. He's got the fucking tracks, dude.
Yeah, I know, and he's got the fucking fleet of bikes too, eh? So I definitely need to get out with him. He's always pretty busy over summer, so like it's always hard to fucking connect with that guy.
Oh, he just carries on, man.
Yeah, he's a fucking trooper, eh?
Oh fuck. Yeah, I'm bloody so keen to get back over there. I've never rode a mountain bike in NZ either. Like I've only been there to
Oh,
ride motos and I'd love to
we need
get
to
on them.
fucking take you to Rotorua. Yeah.
Dude, I'd be so stoked to go and ride that shit, eh?
Yeah, that place is sick, bro.
Where are you spending most of your time training and riding? Is it Rotorua?
Yeah, I spend a lot of time in Rotorua. I'm only 2 hours away from there, so it's a pretty easy drive.
Yeah, right. Do you have
Yeah.
tracks that around like where you are?
Yeah, bro. Yeah, I have tracks probably like 20 minutes from my place, but they're like, pretty mellow stuff. But enough to actually, do a decent trail ride on. So like, I spend pretty good amount of time there. But more so, if I need to go do downhill riding, I go to Rotorua.
Are you doing a lot of enduro stuff for your training, or is it mostly you're doing like mostly downhill runs?
I really wish I could do a lot of downhill runs, but like obviously with Rotorua 2 hours away, like trying to get there every, 2 or 3 days is pretty hard. So like, I do a lot of trail riding, but like nothing like Jack would be doing. Like I only do an hour and a half max, but do a lot of stuff on the road bike as well.
It'd be like kind of, it's a bit of a fucking shit sport to train for unless you're doing the whole gondola thing and you live at a bike park, because there's a lot that goes into just
Yeah.
doing shuttles.
Oh, for sure, bro. Like, yeah, you can I mean, Bruni, he's at least riding with his mechanic probably 2, 3 times a month, testing like proper testing, like 3 days full on testing. And like, we don't really have that opportunity because we're so far away from our mechanics and the resources that they have in Europe compared to what we have in New Zealand is pretty tough. So yeah, I mean, I feel like us fucking New Zealanders and Australians do pretty well on the world circuit considering like we come from such far away countries racing in Europe.
Yeah, that's what like you think about a guy like Sam Hill, man. Like he lives further away
Oh
than
yeah.
pretty much anybody, and he was just like the G of all G's.
Yeah, he's a fucking OG, that guy. I mean, he goes out on a fucking road bike, does 100 and fucking plus Ks on flat pedals. Like, what fucking person does that?
Yeah, he's a savage, eh? He's just like, man, I want to get him on in studio so bad. Like, I don't know how we'd go actually talking, but like, man, the shit that he's done is so next level, eh?
Fuck yeah, he's like the fucking king of our sport. Like, he's such a good dude too. Like, he's such a quiet person, but once you get to know him, he like really opens up. So I feel like, fucking you get him on there, he'll really open up if you've, had a few talks to him before. But yeah, he's such a good dude. Like, A lot of people, think he comes across as like this dude who doesn't really talk much. He's kind of like, Sam Hill, that guy who doesn't talk, but he's actually a really nice guy. And, I fucking become pretty good friends with him. And it was like that, like he didn't really say much to me when I first started talking to him, but
Yeah.
once, like I guess he started feeling comfortable around me, he really opened up and was like, yeah, he's a fucking funny dude too.
When
He's a full
so
fucking full-blown Australian, eh?
Oh dude, yeah, as like Aussie fucking bogan legend as it gets, it's so sick.
Jack Daniels, fucking those big 4x4 flip-flops. You name it, he's got it,
Oh, so when did you get to know him? Like, were you on the same team or like travel, like sort of schedule for a bit or?
When I first started racing downhill, he was still racing, so like obviously he was the fucking, the guy that I looked up to. And when I first went to Europe in 2008 was when he fucking had that crash around the corner in Val d'Isole and still got third, was like fucking smoking everyone by like
Oh,
I
yeah.
think 9 seconds. So like, he was the fucking guy everyone bowed down to. And just like a fucking dude who rode flat pedals and fucking took the fucking wildest lines, like,
Yeah.
big insides on corners that people would never think to do because they're like, oh fuck, that's not fast. But here comes fucking Sam Hill with his foot out, fucking going 10 times faster than them. So like, he was just like the guy that everyone was like, fucking, yeah, this guy's the fucking the
Yeah.
business. But yeah, I guess I started to like, I talked to him and I like, I'd fucking say hello to him, and he was always sort of like, hey, not a massive speaker. And then like kind of gradually grew on him. And yeah, just like probably 2011, 2012, from there, like, become friends. And I could go around his pits and fucking have a yarn to him and shit like that. So yeah.
That's funny. Like Cody Cooper's kind of a similar sort of deal, eh? Like Coops
Yeah.
doesn't say fuck all, and he just like the
Nah.
kind of he'll go out and just do like the wildest shit on the bike, and then come in and he'll be like, "How's that? Yeah, good." And that
Yeah,
you're sort of
he's
all you,
fucking, he doesn't say much either, eh?
yeah. But like then when you actually get him going, like man, I don't know many people that can tell a story better than Cody Cooper.
Yeah, fuck, I know, bro. I've traveled to Vegas with him before, and holy shit, that was a fucking experience in a fucking lifetime, eh?
Dude.
But I feel like I feel like Cody Cooper is like sort of the same as Sam Hill. He's like this fucking Sam Hill of New Zealand. That guy, like, fuck, he just I just like fucking was watching him in the weekend, bro, and like, he doesn't fucking ride his bike much. He works now, like he just get bike and still fucking cleans up every run. It's like fucking hell.
Yeah, dude. Yeah,
Just one of
he
those guys that can flick the switch real quick and go from fucking, qualifying third or fourth fastest to someone who just fucking smokes everyone.
Dude, you hear like you ride with Coops and he makes his bike sound different to everybody
Yeah.
else. And it's just like you hear him, he's on a 450 and it's like I'm just like, what? Like, how does it sound like that? How do you make it do that shit? It's like you're hearing him operate on like a totally different level, and just every time I'm with that dude, his shit blows my mind, eh?
Yeah, he's such a good rider. It would have been fun to like see him a few more years in the outdoors and like with a team, like what he could have done. Because I feel like he really could have fucking been the next BT.
I think with Coops though, like I mean, I'm definitely at some stage I'm gonna have him on and do like a fucking 3 hour yarn with him, but like it'd be like getting blood out of a stone. But like,
Yeah.
I just don't know whether he's the kind of guy that, like personally, he just like fit in those environments with those teams and stuff. You know, like he's just such like a different character. I feel like he could have done good. Like the ultimate scenario for Coop to do good is like give him a sick bike, factory mechanic, the whole deal. But then it's just like him and BT would fly to the race. Like no team, no
Yeah.
factory around. You know, it just seems like
Yeah.
for whatever reason, the environment just doesn't suit the way that he rolls. And it's Sam's probably the same.
Yeah. I mean, that does make sense, bro, because yeah, watching to nations. Like, he just sort of, he just doesn't fucking care, like, he's given a bike, he fucking makes it work. Like, I feel like he'd probably achieve more on a privateer team, like with what you said, like factory bike, all that sort of shit, than he probably would on a factory team, because, like, I guess for him, he's, such a simple guy and just used to fucking, doing shit himself, or having his mechanic from here come over and help him. Like, just feel like probably the simplest shit works better for him.
Yeah, and I feel like he's probably the kind of guy that like just the dude's frothing and chain wanted to do this, and you got all those guys. He's probably just gonna be like, "Fuck off, man! Like, just leave me alone. Like, I just want to cruise." Whereas some dudes, they love that shit.
Yeah, for sure. Most definitely. I like, yeah, when I was at fucking Des Nations with him, like, I was fucking, going and walking around the track and scoping out lines for him. And he's like, "Oh yeah, mean bro. Like, yeah, fuck, that's sick. Like, cheers for that, bro." Whereas, like, I feel like if it was fucking someone else, like, they'd be like, "Fuck, I'm not listening to you, bro. You don't know fuck all." But like, Cooks was just like, "Yeah, fucking sick, bro. Thanks for that." Took some videos for him and showed him some videos. He was like, "Oh yeah, fuck, mean."
Yeah, dude, he's just got the best attitude, eh? I like it's pretty sick that James got a perfect season, but man, if Coops beat him in that moto at Unadilla, like that would have been probably the upset of all upsets. Like, you would never have
Oh, big
an
time.
upset in a race bigger than what Coops did at Unadilla that year.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
What's
That was pretty fucking cool to see that.
it like? Have you been on like experiences with teams where like the vibe's just fucking shit, and you're like, well, they're all nice people, but there's something about it? Or can you see how that's like a thing that happens with guys where they're just like, everything's good, the bike's good, they're all nice guys, but you're just like, fuck, for whatever reason, this just doesn't feel that right.
Yeah, I have actually. I had that when I was on GT, the team that wins on at the moment. Like, yeah, I just fuck, like, those 2 years that I spent on that team, man, that was like the worst 2 years of my life of
Really?
racing. Like, I had no good results. My best result was eighth. Like, come from a consistent top 10 rider and getting podiums to someone who's like fucking gonna get a top 20. Yeah, the bike did not work for me at all. Like, fuck, it was just a piece of shit. Like, it was honestly terrible. Like, I didn't know how you could have a bike that, rode that bad on a World Cup track. Like, I really struggled. And yeah, like, I just didn't, the environment, like, fuck, we were partying every weekend, like, fucking 1,000 euro budget for piss and barbecue every single weekend. Like, I come from a
Really?
team that was a factory team, like trick bikes, like, everything was so dialed there. Like, I didn't have to lift a finger. I'd fucking turn around and the team manager's standing there with my water bottle, like, fucking, just fucking know what I wanted, sort of thing. Like, so, like, going to that, was pretty hard, because my first experience was like, I fucking traveled all the way to Scotland, get to Scotland, fucking can't rent a rental car because I'm underage, and they told me, yeah, there's a rental car there for you to be picked up. Fucking, turn
That
up there,
old
have to wait 3 hours
chestnut.
until someone else. Yeah, that old chestnut. So,
Been
like,
there.
just from there, like, the experience, yeah, the experience didn't fucking sit with me that well. And then, like, the partying and just shit like that, just like really, really took its toll. And, like, I just couldn't handle it, eh? So, yeah, I have experienced that. And I mean, the people on there were good. Like, don't get me wrong, like, everyone was good and, like, good teammates. But just, like, I guess the whole vibe and the way the team was structured was not really what I was after. I was sort of after, results. I'd fucking train my ass off to, because I had a new team. I was like, fuck yeah, sick, new team, new beginning. Like, I'm gonna work my ass off to, be a top five rider and get to the first World Cup. And I'm like, holy fuck, like, I felt like I was riding this fucking bike that gave me arthritis.
That's so good. Were other people doing good on it?
Well, I mean, before that was the Atherdons who were riding it, and, like, it was a bike that was developed around them, and, my riding style to their riding style is so different. So, like, and it was outdated as well. And, like, I mean, Martin Mays was an exception. He fucking is an unreal rider, and was able to ride that bike, you know, really well. But, he had been on that since day one of his riding career. So, like, you know, he was pretty used to that. But I think, when we hopped on it, you know, we started realizing like the what it was doing and how it was riding. Like, fuck, I'd go into a race run and I'd be like, fuck, am I gonna make it down the track today? Or was like, am I gonna have a big crash? Like, it was mental. And like, you know, getting to the bottom and finishing a run was an achievement. So,
Yeah,
I've definitely had that experience.
that's probably not the headspace you want to be in at a World Cup.
No, definitely not, bro. Sitting in the start gate, like fucking wondering what today's gonna bring you.
So like why sign with a team that, or like do you get a chance to ride the bike before you sign on a team like that, or?
Well, I didn't actually, because we were meant to sign a game with Trek, but Trek sort of pulled out last minute, so I was like sort of fucking left with no option, and GT were looking for something. So I was like, you know, like the contract was good and I didn't know how the bike rode. I was like, fuck, well, you know, if the Atherton's can win on that bike, then surely I can do something on it. So I wasn't too worried. And then I got a bike in January, like start of 16, and you know, won a couple of nationals, and I was like, oh yeah, this is all right. Fucking again, it's a whole nother story. It's like fucking hell. You know, just like going from New Zealand racing to world level racing was a whole nother story. So I didn't, you know, like I didn't really have an idea of like what the bike was going to be like, because I, you know, kind of just sort of thought, yeah, these guys, you know, they can win on it, so why can't I?
Would you do that again? Like, would you sign to a team without riding the bike again nowadays?
I'd probably, yeah, well, nowadays, to be honest, most bikes are pretty good. Like, I don't
Yeah,
think
that's
you
what
could go
Jack
wrong
said.
with choosing a good bike. But yeah, from my experience, I definitely would, you know, make sure that I got a bike sent out that I could try. But yeah, bikes these days, they're all fucking pretty good.
Yeah, that thing that you're on now seems pretty sick.
Yeah, it's a really nice bike. It fucking rides really good.
It's what was the deal with the partying? Like, was that the actual team itself, like all of them just loved to fucking party, or was it like the riders on the team? What's the deal there? That just seems
Well, it was
bizarre.
just like, yeah, it was just like sort of like the, I guess the way they were sort of approaching the World Cup, because they wanted to approach it with a different way, like sort of a fun vibe. So like, yeah, we got €1,000 each weekend for piss and a barbecue, and like fucking everyone would just come around and eat food and drink all the. Can you hear me now, bro?
Yeah, got
Yeah,
him, boy.
sweet, sweet, yeah, boy.
You're back.
Sorry about that.
No, you're good.
Yeah, so like the team manager, he just loved fucking partying, he just loves drinking. So yeah, we fucking like the first race was so gnarly, like with the team, like first big race, fucking win, had a concussion, like we all did pretty shit because of weather wise and blah blah blah. Anyway, it was like fucking first party, so we went out with a bang. Like fucking Wynn was on the piss with a fucking head injury, like stupid as. And then yeah, it was gnarly. Like fuck, we got so pissed, and then we had to travel to America the next day. We were up at like 3 in the morning, and fucking my teammate was driving the car, still half cut. Like fucking, you know, just like I'm sitting there like fucking with my eyes wide open, making just like driving in a straight line, and fucking get to the airport, like don't know where to drop the rental car off. We just fucking leave the rental car in like these fucking underground car parks with the keys sitting there. Like it was a fucking disaster, bro. Like we were just like, yeah, this is fucking, this isn't good. And then like, you know, kind of sort of carried on, like sort of slowed down with it. And like, you know, I just fucking turn up the next day and the pits would be fucking turned upside down, grass broken everywhere. It was mental.
Fucking hell, dude. That would have been an experience to go through that shit.
Yeah, and that was like pretty much for a whole year, and then we were like, yeah, no, we can't keep doing this, so like something needs to stop. So yeah, I've never really fucking opened up about it, but you know, there's always a time and place, and I feel like fucking, you know, you've asked me the question, so why not open up about it,
Yeah, I mean
eh?
it's so gnarly to think that, you know, that can be like a team environment. And I mean
Yeah.
it'd be hard to I'm like, you know, it's easy to sit here and be like, fuck, that's crazy, that's stupid. But like when someone's giving you that cash and it's just like, okay, and you know you're not going to get fired, then it's just like, fuck, it'd be sort of hard to not do it.
Yeah, exactly, bro. And like, fuck, you know, we had like, yeah, good barbecues, and it was just like, sort of like, you know, getting all the teams around and like fucking coming over and having a beer and a barbecue. But like a beer and a barbecue never turned out to be in a beer and a barbecue. It turned out to always be a big fucking party.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no, it was, I mean, like a couple of them were good, but like not for a whole season.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure, like, and when you're putting in, like, well, did it affect your training? Like, did you just start going like, ah, oh, fuck it, you don't have to do as good, or like, I don't know, because it'd be hard to have it not affect you in that way too.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was like all about trying to fucking, you know, put aside that the bike wasn't working for me and like try a race and do my best I could. But like then again, I was like, fuck, you know, I'll just fucking have a drink to drown my sorrows. But I mean, it never really affected my training, because like, you know, I'm pretty strong-minded of like being able to fucking, you know, go out the next day and do a ride if I'd been on the fucking piss the night before, etc. So like, yeah, that never really affected me. But you know, like by the end of the season, I was over it. I was like, fuck this. And you know, I was like pretty much to the point where I was like, you know, I would rather fucking buy myself out of this contract and go somewhere else or ride a different bike. Like I was to the point where, you know, going from a top 10 rider to not getting any results pretty hard. And like, you know, I just wanted to be back there, back where I was. And like, you know, those 2 years passed, and then I re-signed with my team that I'd been riding with previously, that I'm riding with now. And I fucking turn up to the first World Cup and fastest qualifier, was probably going to win the race, and had a fucking massive crash and broke my collarbone. But like, that was just, you know, like sort of like everyone was sort of doubting me, like, oh, fuck this guy, you know, you can't get results anymore. Like, you know, G could get results on this bike. And I'm like, yeah, but fuck, that's G, not me. Like, I'm a totally different rider to him. And then like turn up to Croatia and sort of fucking shut all those critics up.
Yeah, it's crazy how fickle an industry can be in just like 1 year of, you know, not getting the results. But I suppose, yeah, you definitely, you throw in like the party thing into the conversation. And I mean, even here, like a bunch of people are shitting on Jats right now, because they're like, oh, Jats are just fucking partying and carrying on. And it's like, dude, there's no racing. Like, there's nothing to do. And people, you know, even in a time where there's no racing, people are still just so down to just shit on people and like,
yeah,
expect that you can't have any fun, or that if you get fucked up ever, you're done. Like, oh, it must be over, never gonna do good again.
I know, yeah. I don't know why people fucking think like that, bro. They're just so small-minded, eh? Like, they think because they live a fucking, you know, a normal life, 9-to-5 job, that they can go out and drink on the weekend and fucking get on the piss. Like, they don't think that we can do that either. They think that that probably affects us, you know, our training, our riding. But, like, you know, we're normal people. We're just like them as well. So, you know, all that sort of shit, you know, kind of just relates to, like, you know, we can do whatever we want too.
What's the industry like in the whole nowadays? Because like the party thing's fucking gone in moto. Like, it's just, that doesn't really, I mean, when I first moved to America and you'd go out after races, like you'd see a few boys there, and there'd be definitely some dudes sending it. And even after the races, like there'd be, and I'm just talking like Anaheim 3, you know, not like Vegas or the end or Parla, and you'd sort of see those guys out. But like these days, it's just done. It just seems like the pressure from, you know, the industry and sponsors and everything to like have this professional look has just pretty much killed that. Is that the same in mountain bikes, or does it still sort of exist a bit? Because like, dude, I remember, like, I grew up in the Mud Cows generation, bro, like watching fucking Cedric Gracia and you know, Steve Pete, oh, and all those boys just fucking just like absolutely sending it constantly,
tipping their hotels upside down, fucking putting chairs through the wall. I mean, obviously it's changed a lot now, like you can't do that, you'd be in fucking some serious trouble. But you know, those got OG, like fucking they get away with that shit. But I mean, like nowadays, you know, like fuck, we still fucking have a party and Fucking get on the piss after a race, because it's so stressful. Fucking preparing yourself for that final race run is so much stress, and to be able to sit down and fucking enjoy a beer and fucking get on the piss, that really, I feel like it really helps, just fucking just fucking being able to relax and take your mind off fucking what you've just done and racing a bike. I feel like it's good. You do it. We sort of made a rule on our team, if someone got on the podium, that we'd get on the piss and celebrate. But fucking that never really stuck to it. You come to fucking the likes of Mount St. Anne or Andorra, where there's always a good party, and we'd be like, fuck, after the race, we'd be like, yeah, boys, we're on. We're gonna go fucking go get wasted.
The thing too
But
is
yeah.
that
I
like
mean, fuck.
oh sorry bro hey the, yeah sorry I think it was just lagging
No,
for a
go ahead.
sec
I didn't say anything, bro.
yeah nah sure I could hear the lag just catching up the crazy thing is man is that like you guys are wild as fuck like to be able to start at the top of a hill and then the bottom of a hill. Like it'd take me fucking 8 minutes to get down, takes you mad cunts three. So it's like there's some different shit going on, and it's like what we're like paying to see, the people that are paying their entry fee and like, or sitting up on the UCI app late at night to watch is like we're paying to watch like wild cunts do wild shit, and then it's like. And then you expect that those same wild people that do this wild shit want to go to bed at 9:30 and read a fucking book. It's like it just probably does, it probably doesn't make sense.
that doesn't
But
happen.
there is like
Yeah,
that's the
no, not at all.
expectation, right?
Well, yeah, for sure. For sure. And I mean, yeah, I guess some teams are like that, but fuck, my team's pretty mellow, and they'll let us get on the piss. They won't be like, oh, nah, boys, you can't go out tonight. We're 28, 29 year olds. You can't be telling people like us, no, you can't go out, boys. That's when
Yeah.
they like. I feel like you got to live a normal life as well. And when all that sort of shit, you fucking have a bad race or you have a good race, you definitely want to go out and celebrate and enjoy the what you've done that day. I just feel like it's like. Sort of takes the edge off of racing and, being able to be a normal person again.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. So what's this half marathon thing you guys are doing?
Fucking Eddie, eh? He came up with this idea the other day. He was like, ring me up. He's like, oh no, he actually sent me this photo. I was like, what the fuck? He sent me this photo of his hallway or his bedroom. And he's got fucking himself fucking photoshopped into this marathon runner. And he was like, yeah, bro, I'm gonna run half a marathon in my room. And I was like, fuck, bro. I thought about it, I was like, fuck, there's no way I'm doing this. My room's 8 meters long. And then I gave it a thought a couple of days. He was like, oh yeah, I'm gonna, make a GoFundMe page and raise some money. I was like, fuck, I could actually I'll actually be keen to do this. So I jumped on board, and we've got him, me, Charlie Murray and Anton Cooper, who's a cross country racer, all on board. So we've got I think we've got about 3.5 grand now, raised for the Westpac rescue helicopter and the spinal unit I was at. So yeah,
Yeah,
we're just gonna split
sick.
the funds and give it to them, and we're gonna run fucking 21K in our bedroom.
So how many he's a dickhead.
know.
How many laps is that? So have you calculated how far, like how many back and forward you've got to go, or like, or you're wearing a fucking Apple
Well,
Watch, or how are you doing it?
yeah, no, I just kind of stepped it out, and I think Charlie, he's done a K, he's run a K, and a K took him. He said he did it pretty quickly, ran pretty fast. K took him a minute, just over a minute.
Wow.
No, sorry, not a minute, not a K, 100 meters,
Oh, yeah.
and yeah, so I think we're gonna do about 2,600 and something laps, maybe a little more. Yeah, she's gonna be fucking hard.
What, and have you started or what?
No, we start on Saturday. We're gonna start at 7:30 in the morning.
Oh, so you're doing it all in like one go all together.
Yeah, all in one go, bro.
Oh, dude, that sounds fucking rad. Count me out.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how it's gonna be a. It's gonna be a big day.
How's your body with like running and stuff? Like, are you pretty much back to normal where like you just feel fine now from the injury, or like is there any residual shit that carries over or?
Yeah, I'm pretty much back to normal now, bro. Like, I've still got a little bit of nerve damage in my feet. Like, my tip of my toes are like a little bit numb. Like, I can still feel them, but yeah, the tips of them, like, is, you know, like the best example I can explain is like, you know, when you sleep on your arm and you wake up and you fucking tingly arm and you like go like this to like get that feeling back. That's what my toes feel like. So it's a little bit weird, but yeah, other than that, pretty much it's back to normal. Like, I still get a little bit of like lower back pain just from having my rods in, which, like, you know, where I was fused was quite low down, so like I use my lower back a lot more with being fused, so I kind of get a bit of pains there. But other than that, everything is pretty good. And like, yeah, I would have run like probably 50 meters since my accident. So like, I actually really don't know how I'm going to get on running 21K.
It's gonna suck a bag, I reckon.
I know. I know. And I
Oh.
mean, like you can see, like, that's the door where I'm going to run to right there. And like, I'm pretty much sitting at the other end of the under other end of the wall.
So what have you got, like a game plan? You got a strategy? You got like some music? You got what? Are you just full? You're just gonna
We're
mad
gonna
dog
go
it?
live. I'm gonna mad dog it. We're gonna go live, and like, yeah, people can throw their answers or, you know, whatever at us, and we'll just be, yeah, chugging along.
Damn, dude. And how are you just gonna measure it? Like, are you just gonna calculate how many laps you gotta do?
Well, try to hit up Garmin to see if they could give us some watches to, you know, to do it, but I haven't heard from them, so I might just use my Garmin computer for my bike if I don't get anything.
Oh,
So it should be pretty accurate.
yeah, that makes sense. You could probably, if you put your phone on you as well, but your phone would be, yeah, you could figure out a way to do it. Or you, because yeah, like you'd lose count of the laps unless you had like a clicker, which that'll
Oh,
get
for
old.
sure, bro. I definitely wouldn't be doing
So what what's
So,
your 2021 plans? Just fucking back to old bulldog, just dominating.
yeah, that's the plan, bro. Obviously, I'm going to be healthy, so like, I'll be able to get proper training in. Yeah, my contract's up at the end of this year, but I'm going to hopefully, well, hopefully, I'm so hopefully I'm going to re-sign with the team I'm with now, so I'm looking forward to that. And yeah, just try, yeah, get back to the old bulldog, and yeah, be consistent again. I feel like, you know, I've learned a lot over this last year myself, and you know, I feel like I'm probably going to be a better racer. So yeah, just all de I guess all depending on what this coronavirus does too. Like, it's kind of, you know, up in the air. I mean, April's a long way away, so you know, a lot of things can change by then. So hopefully for the good, we can get back to some normality and box again properly.
I mean, fuck, like, I mean, they pulled it off this time around though, so I mean, I'm sure
Yeah.
that they'll be able to sort of do it again, but hopefully, you know, you can get back to racing. And I suppose if you've got to deal with all the security and all the masks and shit, at least you're probably a little bit more mentally prepared for it this year,
Yeah, exactly,
this year
bro.
coming up. But yeah, it's just crazy to think that
Definitely.
like that shit could just be the new normal now, you know?
I know, it is. It's crazy, bro. Like, I think about it now, and I'm like, fuck, why can't we just go back to being normal? Like, you know, I feel like it's just a bad case of a flu, but it's just the name of the whole thing, like what it's been called, and you know, I guess the approach of it all. I feel like there's so much behind scenes of it all. Like, you know, fuck, there's so much money to be made and everything, like, you know, hand sanitizers, masks, all that sort of shit, like fucking crazy.
I don't fuck. I just don't know where I don't know where I'm at with all of it, eh? And I'm just pretty much just trying to be a fucking hermit in Burley and not really do too much. You know what I mean? Because like,
Yeah.
it's so hard to know what's actually going on.
Oh, definitely. I mean, with your podcast, it's probably pretty good because you can get people from around where you live and, the likes of us on there as well. But, obviously you fucking need other things to survive too. So like, it's just sort of everything's kind of up in the air, eh?
Yeah, man, I've actually been super lucky, I reckon, to be able to get the guests that I've had on, like, through the time period. Like, it's probably, I mean, it's definitely different than if there wasn't any coronavirus, but it's probably made me work a bit harder to get good guests and like, even just prioritize, like, what a good guest even is, like, it's sort of not
for sure.
always about who the bigger, the biggest sort of number is. And yeah, I think the other thing too that's been cool through this is it's made me appreciate like the community of Gypsy Tales more. Not just,
definitely,
not just
bro.
The guests themselves, but more like the people that actually listen. Like, there's so many fucking gangsters that are like full in the Gypsy Gang,
Yeah, it's sick, bro. Like, fucking, like I was telling you the other day, like that Renee Gracie podcast, bro. Fuck me, that was such a good listen. Like, 2 hours, like, fuck, someone's going to be like, who wants to listen to a 2 hour podcast? But, you do someone good and like someone's interesting, someone's going to listen to that. And like, it's fucking crazy. Like, that chick is mental, bro. Like,
yeah.
Fucking, who would have ever thought like some chick on OnlyFans is making 250K a month minimum? Like, what the fuck?
It's so hectic, eh? I think I need to fucking do OnlyFans, eh? Because I ain't making shit.
I know, bro. Like, it did, like, I actually fucking, when I listened to that podcast, I was like, it was running through my head, like, fucking OnlyFans, like, what the fuck, like, should I hit my missus up and, like.
Dude,
it's like, fuck, it's mad, like.
Dude, and there's so many fucking chicks that do it now, too, to where, like, I can see it becoming, like, this new normal where you're, like, going to parties and you hook up with a chick and then you, like, let's say you're just going to fuck this chick at a party or whatever. She got OnlyFans and she's just like, wait, let's just film it. And like, you're doing these like,
yeah, you
want to
make 20 grand?
Yeah, I'll give you some cash. Like, or here, I'll suck your dick, but can you film it? Like, in the same way that a chick asks you to take a selfie for her. Like, and it,
yeah, bro.
Shit's going to get
it
weird.
It seems like that. Like, and like, just, it seems like fucking, there's so many chicks out there with OnlyFans now.
Hectic, eh?
Yeah, but that was a good listen, and I want to listen to that. I think it's what's his name, Troy.
Troy Candy.
Troy Candy, yeah. I want to know. Yeah, I was checking that dude's Instagram out. He looks like a fucking, looks like a boy.
Yeah, he's a bit of a lad, eh? I've never. I just don't really get on the piss that much more these days because of my kidney. But like, fuck, he'd be pretty fun to go out with, I reckon.
Yeah, he looks like he'd be a funny fucker to go out with. Has he made his money in like social media?
Nah, also because
all those fucking straw pedo things.
Yeah, those straw pedo things, pretty much. But before that, he had that what's it called? Eye Candy Motorsports. So it's kind of like a West Coast Customs type of deal. So like, he does like bulk people's cars, man.
Right, sick. Fuck, that's cool.
Yeah, no, he's a fucking, like, I actually had a friend of mine, Jack Simpson. I don't know if you've ever heard of Jack Simpson, but he raced, like, Fink and stuff like that. He used to be, like, one of the good motor dudes in Oz. He's the sickest cunt ever. Like, he's a fucking legend. And anyway, he hit me up and he was like, oi, you got to get Troy Candy on your podcast. Like, he's a mate of mine. And he's just moved up there. And I literally followed him on Instagram like 2 days before he did the podcast. So I hadn't even really.
No way.
Yeah. Didn't. Yeah. Just wasn't really across it. But yeah, he's a fucking super nice dude. Like, you could probably make a judgment on him based on Instagram. And, if you followed
him.
But like, nah, fucking nicest dude. And some people, like, you do the podcast with and they're sort of just smoke bomb after, like, they'll post a couple things, but they're not like that down to keep talking to you and, actually being a homie. But he's like a fucking G, like, he'll sort of hit you up all the time.
That's cool, bro. Yeah, I figured that he was like, had his head switched on, was a nice guy from when I had a look on his Instagram.
Yeah, it's fucking, it's cool too, like, a lot of people sort of look up to that. To that dude, and you can talk about some pretty cool shit. Like, I think just so many people are caught up in the whole Instagram thing these days, and it's good to have a guy that is like deep in that world tell everybody, like, oi, it doesn't mean shit.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it was like what Renee was saying as well. Like from what she was saying, she said that she couldn't give a shit about her social media. Like, you know, if it fell off the face of Earth tomorrow, she'd still be, you know, like pretty well sorted.
Dude, she's renting, like she's about to come out with her own podcast with her and her friend. And
Sick.
yeah, she's renting the studio, so she's in here every week now. And she actually doesn't give a fuck. Like she is a full on G, that chick. Like, you know,
Yeah.
a lot of people say like, oh yeah, I don't give a fuck. I got no fucks to give, man. Like they give you that old treatment.
Yeah.
But a lot of people do. And like she actually doesn't care. Like it's pretty sick watching her. You know, like you just watch someone move, like the way that they deal with business and the way that they talk
Yeah.
about things, and you can just like pick up on, it's like that's how they operate. And she's one of those chicks where
Yeah.
just like not
Yeah,
many chicks operate like her.
I figured that from listening to her, and she was just like, yeah, she didn't give a fuck about anything, eh?
Yeah, then I
Like talking about the supercar racing and go-kart racing with all the dudes and shit. She'd like fucking, I like how she was like, yeah, I just tell the dads to fuck off and shit like that. I was like, fuck yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, hey, I'm gonna get Eddie
Yeah.
on, dude. But yeah,
Yeah, bro.
thanks so much for hanging out. We've been wanting to
No
do one
worries.
of these for a while, and I still want to get you in the studio at some point. Hopefully,
Yeah, when
hopefully.
things get normal, bro, I'll definitely make the trip over and we'll get in the studio.
Yeah, dude, I'd love that, and we'll do some riding and shit. I want to. I'm keen to get back to New Zealand too as soon as possible. So.
Yeah, boy. Yeah, we'll line it up when you come back over.
Fucking eighth, boy.
Sweet, brother. Well, good chatting to you, and cheers for that, eh? Appreciate
Yeah, no dramas, and I'll stay tuned on Saturday. I'll give you some encouragement.
Yeah, fucking tune in.
All right, legend, I'll talk to you soon.
Sick. See you, bro. Bye.
See you, bye.